from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 34 from March 29, 2007. Apple TV. This could be episode 34, or it could be episode 35, depending on if you want to count the lost episode from last week. Welcome to MacBreak Weekly. I'm Leo Laporte. There was an episode that was deemed too ghastly to release last week. And I guess there was a problem with the recording device. But we've reconvened. And, you know, I think, Merlin, you should just tell us everything that you said last week again.
Don't you think?
Do it like the FedEx guy does that commercial.
really fast. Basically, I think it was like an hour and a half of digital clipping. So
yeah, apparently it was clipped to death. So yeah, Merlin Mann's back from themerlinshow.com. And Scott.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Merlin. Scott Bourne from poddango.com and podcastingtricks.com. And hey,
I'm actually in the Podango production studio.
Oh, wow. It sounds really good.
Well, it's not done yet, but I'm in the studio.
Oh, you're in the room anyway.
I'm in the room.
That jolly laugh, of course, who else? Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times and the colossal waste of bandwidth, CWOB.com.
Hey there, hi there, and ho there.
I just love saying CWOB.com. We're waiting for Alex Lindsay to join us, but we will begin, and I will make sure nothing is clipped and all is recorded. And we will go right ahead. I guess the biggest story, and there's just no question that's the biggest story, and I really wanted to do a show this week, is Apple TV. How many? A show of hands. Scott, you have one?
Actually, I tested one with a friend. I did not buy one.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Andy Anatko has been testing one today, I think.
Yes, I am a newbie. I have had one for exactly 5 hours, and I've managed to mistake it for the hot plate at my coffee maker once.
It's pretty warm. It's pretty warm. You wouldn't want to put it under the blankets with you.
Actually, the cool thing is that it is about the right size for like heating up like a Pop-Tart or something. I definitely want to try that. Just put one of them chocolate ones on top of it. Not enough to melt it, just enough to make it like airline fresh.
It does look like one of those fancy stoves that doesn't have a burner, but just has kind of an electroconductive surface.
I can top this conversation. We actually did get a Jiffy Pop popcorn thing to make a few pops on one.
You're kidding. You were able to pop popcorn?
It did not pop the whole thing, but it made enough pops that we actually got a couple of kernels.
That means it's hot enough to boil water. That's hot. Wow. Because don't you make popcorn with boiling water? I know I do.
Yeah. Actually, I just buy it at the movie theater usually, Leo. But
Andy Anatko, Merlin Mann, Scott Bourne, we all have one, I guess. I have one.
I got one on Friday.
Me
I got
too.
One on Friday, and I have been using the crap out of it. I love it. I take back everything I said, all of my naysaying.
Really? No, I got
yeah,
home.
Yeah, I mean, I don't take back all of it. Some of it sucks. I mean, we can talk about the cons, but I was very impressed with the setup, and I've been super impressed with the quality.
Well, let's start with the out-of-the-box experience. I also got mine. I don't know when I got it, but I got home on Friday from Vancouver, and that's when I set it up in about 5 minutes.
Yep.
Very easy. Comes out of the box. It's beautiful. About the size of a personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut. And it just about as hot, too, apparently.
And just about as expensive if you buy them from the airport.
Yeah, that's right. $299 personal pan pizza. It has HDMI out, but it doesn't come
that's
with
cool.
any cables. So I
no bought, cables, that's not cool.
No, but Apple does sell a $19 HDMI cable, which I bought at the same time. I was surprised at Apple's reluctance to gouge us in the cables.
You can get that same cable at Best Buy for $82 if you're looking for
I know,
a good deal.
I thought they really... missed a bet there. That Apple, it's a whole new Apple. And then it also has component. So if you have a TV that doesn't support HDMI, you choose HDMI if you could, but if it doesn't, you could do a component out. And it has also a Toslink SPDIF output, digital audio output, and standard analog red and white left and right audio output. And that's it. Somebody told me it works with an analog, an old style TV, but only in black and white.
I heard it works, but it's really smashed up. You know, like when you can do the change the modes on your HD, and if you go to standard from wide, everybody looks really skinny. I heard it comes out really skinny on a regular TV.
I wouldn't
TV.
Mind that.
Well, it depends. I don't have an HD set yet because I'm waiting for them to cost like what they should cost, which is about $412. If your TV was made in the last year and a half, there's a good chance that it does have an HD, phony mode that will automatically correct the distortion for you. As it turns out, my Sony Wega TV does that. I was glad that I went on forums because I was about to say, wow, isn't that cool that does that automatically? But then I found out that no, it was my TV set correcting.
A smart TV, yeah.
Yes.
Well, we got a cheapy Costco, really very near the bottom of the line Costco, and we've been super happy with it. And it does one thing I love about it. It's got three modes that I'm aware of. We're running it, I guess, whatever at 1080i or whatever it is. But it also you can do it at widescreen, standard or zoom, which is great. So if you've got something that's like super widescreen, like that very wide aspect ratio,
Lawrence
you can run
Arabia.
It at zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like doing scan and pan in a kind of fairly not obnoxious way.
Scott, you're probably the most knowledgeable video guy. It does 1080i, does 720p, does 480p. If they, I have like you, I have the Pioneer. You have the Elite, but I have the 5070, the Pioneer Plasma. Is it better to run at 1080i or 720p if you had the choice?
If you have an HDMI cable and you're running and you have a TV that supports 1080i, that's the way to do. But keep in mind, it's the content that generates the need. So obviously, you don't want to run a 720 signal at 1080i unless you have a really good up converter. And sometimes the up converters really suck.
Does the Apple must do some up conversion if it?
It does. All I tried to do, and I actually was working with a friend that bought it because I'm waiting for version 2, but I hooked up her HDMI cable, and I have to say it looked pretty darn good. The first thing I actually noticed wasn't video, but was audio. When I was looking for all the outs, I kept saying, well, where do you plug in the surround sound? And then I realized, oops, you don't.
Well, if you got plugged in the Toslink, the digital, what would you get? Would you just get stereo?
Yeah, you just get stereo. There's no this device does not support surround sound.
That's not good. They didn't want to license it, probably.
Probably not, which seems to me to be kind of a, like, okay, who are the kind of people that are going to spend $299 on a toy to make their already expensive TV work? Well, they're going to be pretty, early adopter, high-tech types, and they're going to say, oops, no surround sound?
It's kind of funnily positioned because it's not super high-end, but nor is it low-end. You need at least EDTV, really, to use it.
Yeah, I'm going to bet you dollars to donuts it has surround sound in the next version or something like it.
It's a hardware issue, though. They couldn't do it in firmware, right?
I don't think so. No, there's simply no output for it. So
I was able to overdrive it too, the audio, very easily by turning it up.
Yeah, it doesn't really sound that great. It looks better than it sounds,
but it's hard to tell if it's a source material. Now,
did you find that podcasts were kind of quiet? I thought it was just mine, but then I listened to a bunch, and all of the podcasts were. I had to really crank up the volume.
I'll have to
set.
Listen to Twit because we heavily compress Twit and it's all, peaking at zero VU. So I'll have to, because I know the levels that Twit is recorded at. So I'll have to listen to that, one of our podcasts, and see. Because you never know. I mean, most podcasters aren't really audio engineers. So I have to say that, I watched a few things. I watched a movie that I bought in the post 480p era. You remember that Apple changed the resolution of iTunes video and increased it. Right, they went to 720p from 480p, or is that right?
It's 640. I think
640.
It's 640. It's not 720.
Okay, so they upgraded, and I watched the Royal Tenenbaums, which I downloaded recently. So that's 640p. It looked okay, not like a DVD, certainly not like an HD DVD. But I didn't see much artifacting unless I got close to the screen. On the other hand, some of the TV shows, even the more recent TV shows, didn't look very good. You could really see the artifacting. They were very smushed and smeary.
We christened it with buying a season of Heroes, which, by the way, is a very good show. And my eyes are not as careful as you guys, but I thought
Heroes
it looked fine.
Heroes bugged me.
I didn't like Heroes, huh? Did you stick with it?
I like the show. I meant the video.
There were quite a few artifacts, Leo, in Heroes. I also downloaded it, and it's the kind of thing that if Alex were watching it, I could just see him pulling his beard out one little whisker at a time.
Yeah, I wish we had Alex on here because I'm wondering what he has he seen it
because
either?
I I don't know, but I've looked at stuff on Alex's TVs that came out of the 1080p camera, and I'm like, wow, that looks really good. And he's like, oh, no, no, that's crap. Look down here. Look. There's like a little pixel down here. It's really bugging me.
Why does that not surprise me?
I think if he got this thing and turned it on, he'd literally just – we'd have to call the emergency room for him.
So in terms of – let's go through the bit by bit. So in terms of ease of setup, let's continue with ease of setup. It plugs in very easily. Starts working right away. Has a little screensaver. You don't have to worry about burn-in.
Does a lot of self-discovery. I was amazed to find, first of all, it had no problem at all finding.
I've been doing that, too. I think it's the Jungian therapy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Part of the collective unconscious.
Feel the rock.
It had no problem at all finding my OpenAP. And what really blew me away was, at first I was confused. It automatically, I don't know how it decided this, but I had at the time three iTunes accounts. Macs with iTunes running, and it found the one with iTunes that was sitting right next to the computer, which was pretty cool. And it went ahead and made the hookup automatically.
You have to pair them. You have to enter a code.
It's kind of like doing Bluetooth, where you got to go in and say, right, you know, here's a 5-digit code.
Then you run over to the Mac and you put it on the Mac.
That's right.
But you only have to do that once.
Right.
Or when you change.
And there are two different ways you can pair an iTunes. You have to decide ahead of time, is this going to be a streaming source or is this going to be a syncing source? One of your Macs or PCs can sync to the 40 gig hard drive. And I would imagine that you would make that, I mean, look, 40 gigs isn't a lot. You certainly probably have a lot more content on your hard drive. I would imagine you'd make that the one that is the slowest, at least. Because I tell you, I have one that's way far away in the living room and it buffers constantly. And so as a result, that's the one I'm syncing on.
The thing that amazed me, I'd heard people say this and it didn't really sink in until I did it. It's very, very similar to plugging in and using an iPod in terms of the syncing.
Yeah.
Down to the fact that you can, and one thing, and again, this is something I think people overlook a lot with careless use of their iPods, is you can do stuff with things like smart playlists and with saying only push so many episodes, but you can do really cool stuff. Like you can say for movies, you can say include everything in this list plus the following ad hoc additions. So it's got some really smart ways that very limited amount of space.
It has something I hadn't seen before, which is the last five purchases, the last five movies downloaded, mm-hmm, which I liked, and then TV shows not yet watched, which I liked.
Or she showed me the last three unplayed podcasts. Or whatever.
Yeah. It also, and I this was something I was a little concerned about because I've used all five of my authorizations. It does, just like an iPod, it does not need to be authorized. If
that's good news.
If the iTunes you're syncing up with is authorized, it will be able to sync.
Has it been picky with you about the movies that it would accept?
Well, I've only played iTunes stuff and podcasts, and it's worked. Everything that plays in iTunes so far, and we'll get to hacks a little later because there is a DivX hack, but it didn't take long, did it?
There were some podcasts that I had a little trouble with. I think the folks at Pixel Core recently re-output all the MacBreak stuff.
Yeah, Alex
when I very first hooked it up, it had problems.
Yeah, Alex told me that lower third interactivity that they use, what is that called, Story Maker or whatever it is? I wish you were here. Does not work with it. And so that initially, yeah, MacBreak didn't work, but they've made, and we'll also talk about this once we get the review out of the way, they're making, and I'm sure everybody, I know you are, Merlin, will be making Apple TV versions of their shows.
That's right.
Yeah. But we'll talk about, again, I'm going to try to keep us in order. So in terms of setup, ease of use, Merlin, thumbs up.
I think it worked great. I mean, it's that part of it. I think that's the one part of it that I mean, for me has worked great. I have had a little bit of trouble as far as the initial setup. It went pretty great. For some reason, I don't know if this is maybe a DHCP problem or some kind of, I don't know what's happening, but occasionally it seems to forget that it's synced up, and I'll try and kind of go in through I didn't even realize the way you described that, the syncing versus the streaming, but you can go in through the sources menu in your Apple TV and actually surf to your iTunes library.
That's an important point, by the way. Only one source at a time.
That's right. That's right. And again, like an iPod, if you say, you know, I want to get divorced from this particular syncing source, you lose everything that's on the Apple TV.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's obviously copy protection.
Right. Sure.
So A-, A plus on the setup.
I mean, for my setup, I'd give it an A-.
I'll give it a solid A. How about you, Scott? Do you have an opinion on setup?
I think it's an A. I think it's a very nice out-of-the-box
experience. Hard to think of how it could be much easier, yeah.
Well, how about that startup screen? I'm not even a big nerd for that stuff, but isn't that beautiful?
Oh, and let me tell you, on a 50-inch plasma, that's the highest res thing. it sparkles. How about you, Andy? Have you had enough time to have an opinion on the setup?
Yeah, I mean, that's still a very fresh experience. I was using it through an Airport Extreme, and it was, again, don't read the manual as if it came with a manual, but just plug in things that look like they want to be plugged in, turn things on, pick up the remote, and for God's sakes, it's actually working.
Pretty intuitive. The only
bad news I've had so far is I've got like 3 or 4 or 5 different base stations in my hardware library. I decided to put just a dip a little toe in to see what hell would be visited upon me if I tried to use a non-Apple 8211N base station, and it didn't like my Linksys at all. But then again, my Linksys didn't work with a whole bunch of different things, so I don't know yet whether it's just a Linksys problem or whether it's an Apple TV problem.
Yeah, I'm using it with the new Airport Extreme. It works fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Merlin, you're not using an Airport Extreme.
No, I'm not. I'll go let the cat out of the bag a little bit. Our MacBreak Weekly friend, John Foster, is going to write a tutorial for 43 folders on how to run dual networks, on how to run an N and G, so you don't end up pulling down the N network. But right now, I'm just pretty much a G house right now.
Okay. And it works fine? Buffering, slowdowns, anything like that?
You got to give it a minute.
It does buffer. It preloads the video.
It wants the whole thing before it'll get started. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not the whole thing, but enough so that if there is a hit, it will be able to play. But it will rebuffer. We have a real troublesome Mac right at the edge of the zone, and it will rebuffer. In fact, it was very annoying. My wife and son were yelling at me. We're trying to watch The Office, and every 5 minutes, you know, as Steve Carell's face is frozen in some hideous pose while it rebuffers. So it will do that. You need to, you know, and that's a 2-bar. That was with a 2-bar connection. So you do need to have a good connection. And that's a B. That was on a Mac Mini, which is a B machine. Or is it G? It might be G. It's a newer Mac Mini. I don't know. Do I have a B machine on there? I think I do. I have one B machine. I haven't tried it yet with B. So I would advise
you not to, Leo.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So anyway, setup, I think we all agree, at least an A-, and in some cases an A. Let's talk about performance. We talked a little bit about how it looks. How are people feeling about how it looks?
Well, I mean, it's not supposed to really distract from what you're going to be looking at on the screen. Just from like a, you know, Mac weenie aesthetic point of view, I'm kind of frustrated with Apple that they seem to be fascinated with gray boxes with rounded corners.
It looks just like the Extreme, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, remember, there was a time in which, you know, part of the fun of going to a Steve Jobs keynote is like, I bet they've got one that actually looks like a brand of fruit we've never seen before. It's like a kiwi fruit shaped iPod something, and now it's always a rectangle with rounded corners. Yeah. Oh, look, and they decided to make it out of aluminum this time.
In this case, though, you don't want it to distract.
Exactly. I mean, it's just going to be all you're really interested in is looking at that blinking light to see what it's up to, and that's about it, so who cares?
Actually, I was talking about the on-screen video
look
and feel, but that's fine. No. Any other comments on the the hardware? The
Macintosh form aesthetic weenie.
No, I think that's important. Actually, I didn't really think about it.
Actually,
the good thing is it's neutral. I mean, you don't want to see it really in your home theater.
Right, precisely. But as for the interface, you know, I was really I keep trying not to get disappointed with Apple's decision to more or less shut out people who still have old-fashioned analog TVs like 480 displays. And part of it was like, well, I bet the interface is a little bit tricky, and it wouldn't really work well on this resolution. And really, there's nothing that I've seen in this experience so far that really justifies Apple shutting out so many users. I mean, obviously, you want the digital experience to get the most out of it, but the content for now does not really justify having an HD set. Also, how many people are going to have an HD set in the room where they want the Apple TV to work? I have 3 sets in my house right now. Only one of them is HD capable, and I haven't even upgraded it yet. But the place where I want to actually use my Apple TV, believe it or not, is in my office with the 27-inch analog TV. And are people going to be wanting to install this on every single CD? On every TV that they have? I think the answer to that is obviously no.
Well, I have 2 HD TVs, and I'm really wishing I had 2 boxes, because I have to say the thing that really is, it's convenient. I mean, it's so convenient.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From an aesthetics point of view, I figured out that if you stack the Airport Extreme base station and the Apple TV along with the Mini, you have a white version of the Waffle House deal of the day.
and you can cook waffles on it, which
easily.
Is great.
I you know, I thought, oh, this could stack right on the Extreme, but then I thought, boy, that's asking for a real heat sandwich.
You could just cancel your PG&E account.
Yeah, no then. Kidding. It's hot all the time, and I guess because that's the hard drive's running. It took well over, say, 18 hours to synchronize the 40 gigs. That's how slow the network is from that Mini. That's where I was synchronizing it.
Well, the one that we hooked up, Leo, for some reason, after the screensaver came on, we found this music that my friend said she never bought, and it was like, it's getting hot in here, taking off my clothes.
Yeah. How do you think it's mostly going to be a case of people expecting that they're going to get their content loaded onto the Apple TV overnight as opposed to on demand, where you wake up in the morning
yeah.
in the 6 hours, which nothing has been happening. That's when all the stuff that got downloaded during the day will be transmitted over.
I wonder how many people are going to sync. I mean, the streaming works so well if you've got a decent speed network. I don't know if you need to sync.
But it's kind of a pain in the butt to make sure that one machine is left on all the day.
Will it
wake up an iMac from sleep in order to schedule a sync?
Well, here's another way to think about this. Right now, I mean, I think a lot of the discussion up till now has sort of almost wanted to say that the Apple TV is going to replace some component that's there now, right? A lot of the discussion has been, well, you know, oh, how does this compare to a TiVo, or how does this compare to this or that? And I'm already seeing myself using it for a different kind of viewing. And maybe this is just the color of my crystal because I put out a video podcast, but I could see this being very much something where, yeah, you continue to watch all your regular TV shows on your TiVo or your cable box or however you like to do it. But there's something, you know, with the syncing, there's something really cool about loading up a ton of content that's going to get updated regularly and just knowing that that can happen in the background. That's going to happen when you're not using it. And then just like you would with your iPod, it really is a lot like a video iPod for your TV. It's just going to load up in the background. And I don't know. I see. I mean, like I say, I mean, I went out and bought a season of Heroes, which is kind of weird because I could just get a, you know, season pass.
Yeah.
But I see people using this potentially really differently once they get the hang of it.
See, this really is one of those devices where I really want to look forward to 1 year from now to see exactly what role people find for it, because I'm still not convinced that this is really going to motivate people to buy videos off the iTunes store instead of buying it in really the best format available, the cheapest format available, which is DVD. I have a couple of terabytes worth of DVD files that I've ripped, and one of the first thing I did was copy the Prestige from my G5 tower onto the thing, and also set up a couple syncs that simply says, if there's a movie file that I haven't played, that I ripped that I added in the past week but haven't watched yet, please automatically sync this. And I don't know how many days it's going to take to move one DVD quality file up there.
Yeah.
But if an Apple TV is positioned by Apple as a device that allows you to have this wonderful opportunity to keep buying $10 downloads off the iTunes store, boy, is it going to fail miserably. But if it's a way,
I think it's a Trojan horse, Andy. I mean, once you, to me now, I see this as this, again, this could be crazy, but I really see myself watching. First of all, this becomes an outlet for people to be more motivated to make things like HD podcasts, in my opinion.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
No, that's the big thing. I mean, I do local TV on text things, and the idea that I can simply, this is really motivating me to take all those DVDs that I've been burning just to archive these things and make a video podcast, because the idea of one day later, anybody all the way across the country can watch this just by virtue of the fact that they have an Apple TV and they've got these things synced. That's incredible.
Alex Lindsay has joined us. Hello, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, we're sorry. We started without you because we couldn't see you, but I'm sure you'll jump right into the conversation here.
No, I was just about to say, I mean, one of the things that we're noticing, and you know, we do a lot of podcasts outside of this one and video podcasts, and everybody wants us to deliver at 1080p, which is still a little bit higher than what the Apple TV will do, but it excites me that, you know, we're going to get to be able to produce a lot of stuff, and people are actually going to see a high quality video.
If you do a 1080p, will it play on the Apple TV?
It won't. It has to be 1080i, I think, is the highest, I believe. And we're just starting to really dig into the tech.
Merlin, who's producing it with you at PixelCore, is already doing a Apple TV version, specific version of his show, The Merlin Show.
Right, in Mac,
it's,
right?
Yeah, it's kind of our, it's sort of like a widescreen 640. So it's 854 by 480. But I got to tell you, I had a real white knuckle moment bringing that up, thinking, gosh, A, I hope this runs. And B, if it does run, I hope it looks good. And I was really surprised.
You should look as good, if not better, than anything else on there. I mean, I think you're probably going to look
amazing.
Better than the stuff iTunes is selling.
Well, next month, we're finally getting the cameras. Actually, it's just, you know, again, this might be a little bit inside baseball, but something that Alex and I have been talking about, the cameras that we're getting, the camera that I'm getting next month, and I think some cameras that you guys are getting, has an HDMI out. That you might want to talk about this, Alex, but now you can, for a surprisingly small amount of money, for just about a grand, you can get a camera that goes HDMI straight into a computer.
How much did we spend on those XL2s, Alex? Tell me again.
You showed me an example of that, though, Alex, that was pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, the big thing is that it's going to be really exciting for a lot of people producing. Now, they don't have, just to make you feel better, Leo, they don't have the same lenses on the front.
Right.
It's much easier to do a lot of this stuff. But at the same time, you're seeing these little, very inexpensive cameras. The HDMI basically is coming out of most of these cameras uncompressed. So it's still what we would call 422, which is a little technical, but it means that the color is a little bit less than the black and white information. But it's as good as TV. I mean, that's what TV cameras are doing generally, are 422. And it is not being compressed down to HDV or DV or
that's
whatever.
That's the key,
it's
uncompressed.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not going to have a lot of the little blocking. Now, it's going to have blocking by the time you actually end up on iTunes because you're going to use H.264 or whatever. But there is a difference. There really is a big difference between what you can do in production and how much quality control you can have when you have really a much higher res signal.
And well, it's like shooting in RAW. Don't you have – you got more room to move in either direction.
Yeah, and one of the things about this is that it is going to provide the actual user, people who are listening to this show, what you have are, of course, the tools to really do very, very high-quality work readily available at the same time that you have the ability to distribute it, which is those things really haven't been there altogether before. And
so,
I think it's very exciting.
That's one of the keys about this is that podcasts is on the menu right there with movies, TV shows, music, and photos. You're a peer with those things. Do you all see this as a real opportunity for video podcasters to suddenly play with the big guys?
It's absolutely, in my opinion. Daniel Aaron wrote a wonderful thing. I did a post yesterday on 43 Folders that linked to a couple really good stories about the problem of everybody now. Okay, great. Now I've got an HD TV. I've got an Apple TV. Give me some HD content. And Apple, on iTunes, is not going to be pushing out any 4 gigabyte movies anytime soon. And so it's weird. In this weird way, it gives a competitive advantage to somebody who's pushing out a 5-minute HD, 720p podcast. As you say, Leo, you're going to look better than the stuff that people are buying on the iTunes store.
That's really interesting. Now we just have to get the content up. And, of course, I guess for our audience, the content's there. But I'm just saying it's an opportunity for somebody to do something that really could be. Now, you were talking about how you buy your how you use it, Merlin. Now, I use it as my primary TV input is iTunes. I don't watch TV from the cable. I download I buy stuff and download stuff and rip stuff. So it's my primary. It's my TiVo. This is the thing I've been waiting for. Frankly, rip of Woodstock that I made for my video iPod, and it looks fine even though it's super widescreen. It's pretty watchable. I watched the Royal Tenenbaums yesterday on it, the whole movie, and it was great. I mean,
here's where it gets interesting, though, is we talked about this a little bit on Twit, but the part where it gets really interesting is, okay, so if you're like me, you flip it on, you watch Battlestar Galactica rerun in HD on Universal, off the TiVo, and then I flip on a high resolution podcast. I watch one of my high resolution podcasts, and then you bring up something that's just on kind of standard sort of iPod size video.
Yeah, you don't want to watch it.
Here's the funny part. Everybody keeps saying to me, "Well, who wants to watch a couple hipsters with bad haircuts talk to each other in HD?" Well, maybe nobody, but I think that bar is going to get raised with Apple TV. People are going to come to expect a higher level of quality, no matter what the content is. It's going to be right now. If you watch an iPod video on Apple TV, iPod size video, it's a little bit like watching full screen YouTube.
Now here's an interesting idea. Do you think that this will give sort of an interesting advantage to the networks and the real commercial producers? Because you really can't afford to serve gigabytes and gigabytes of gigabytes of high HD video if you're just two guys with bad haircuts in a dorm room. It's going to have to go to people who, for some reason, are making money off of their podcasts, or networks who are smart enough to say, well, if people aren't tuning in at 6:30 in the evening, why don't we just burn an HD podcast of this newscast so people can see it overnight?
that's where Libsyn makes this disruptive. As long as Libsyn can stay in business, that's a non-issue. As long as there's unmetered bandwidth vendors, it's not an issue.
Good point, though. It is not just an opportunity for podcasters, it's an opportunity for everybody, including mainstream media, if they see it.
They'd be crazy to overlook this opportunity.
I'd love to pay a little bit. I don't know if I'd pay a little bit more, but I'd love to be able to download 24, for instance, at HD quality rather than, you know.
Well, that's what I want. I wonder if Apple is going to start to give you higher quality now. I mean, it's not enough. 640 by 480 is not enough.
I hate to interrupt, but I just want to know, were you guys talking about the Canon camera that's going to have
HV20?
Yeah, I think we're going to buy four of those.
That has HDMI out.
It's
incredible. It's a potentially disruptive camera in terms of the cost and what it
can. Here's the thing is that it's truly a 1920 by 1080 chip that's sitting inside of that little camera.
Oh, so you're getting 1080p.
It'll do 1080. It does some kind, you know, it's still doing some kind of, that's what the chip is able to do, but it is really able to shoot 1080p going out of that HDMI. Now, I think that how it's doing it, I mean, we don't want to get too much into this, but it's kind of doubling up the interlacing, which is fine. That's the way everybody does it. It's kind of a segmented frame is what it's called. So the, and we have to test it. Merlin's been willing to be the guinea pig, but as soon as he tests it, if it does 50% of what I think it's going to do,
are you going to do the thing like they did in Clockwork Orange, where you have his eyelids pried open and make him watch it, or is he just going to volunteer to watch it?
I think I like that. No, April 6th, I've my order's in. I can't wait.
That's exciting. Yeah. That's really
neat. What strikes me that there's not only disruption here, but disintermediation going on. I mean, this does give consumers choice. And, you know, the whole model of broadcast television and radio for years and years and years, decades, has been we now interrupt you with this program. And you no longer have to be interrupted.
No ads. I haven't seen any ads in years, frankly, on my TV set. Whether it's skipping through TiVo or just not downloading them without ads. Let's not forget, by the way, it does also play the music that's on your computer. And while the audio on the video didn't sound so good, the music sounded fine to me. I have a stereo, you know, a good stereo hooked up to the TV. You do get your photos. And it has a screensaver that'll do a nice little slideshow with your photos. If you sync your photos over, I don't think it does the photos streaming. So it's really a complete entertainment system. Do you think that that's important, or is it really all about the video?
I think it's important for a pair of speakers. Yeah.
I think the video is definitely the most important part, and I think it's the
Apple TV, after all, not the Apple Home Entertainment unit.
But for Leo, from your point of view, you've made such a good case for the fact that we need to start talking about audio podcasts or netcasts or whatever in terms of not just being this thing that you listen to on an iPod. And for me, that means now I can pull in Sound of Young America and listen to it in my living room.
That's right.
Just like I would This American Life, whenever I want.
And you may want it. You may actually end up doing that now that it's easy. I'm curious.
And it's
I don't know.
In the background. The thing. This is the part that I think people, again, you kind of got to get your head around this. But you're used to your iPod being ready for your commute in the morning, and it pulls down your podcast. But potentially, you throw tons of feeds at this thing, and it becomes like, it becomes a little bit like subscriptions in the TiVo. Stuff just loads up, and when you're ready, you go and watch it. Right. And then when that goes away, more stuff gets pushed in.
Yeah, it actually becomes a new form of channel surfing, where instead of channel surfing against 200 channels worth of crap, you are now channel surfing against about 20 hours worth of stuff that you don't have time to listen to or watch.
But at least it's the stuff that you wanted, to watch.
Exactly, but now you don't even have to be quite so selective. I can afford to be selective when I'm on my iPod, but I still have that same experience of, gee, I don't know what I want to listen to. I just know I want to listen to something without anticipating that I want to listen to the Penn Jillette show or I want to listen to Fresh Air.
I do think the ability for podcasters to get a little bit more attention as a result of having podcasts right there on the menu is a big thing related to the whole Apple TV genre, and whether or not, you know, the Apple TV as we see it now or some version down the road becomes a big deal. The thing I'm most excited about is this gives us a chance to start that dialogue, because how many times have we all responded to the question, what's a podcast? Excuse me. This will naturally cause people to ask that question, and that's kind of a good thing, because we can say, well, let us show you.
Anybody who buys this knows, because they're using iTunes, they're probably Mac people. I mean, it's not going to open eyes in the Windows world particularly, is it?
Well, the iPod was kind of an iPod,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
But all you got to do, especially when you have a free piece of software that you can stack right next door to Windows Media Player, and simply say, well, this has an Apple logo, this software does not have an Apple logo on it. See which one you like better.
Yeah.
And one missing piece, I don't know how they would pull this off. Actually, one thing that's kind of cool we didn't mention, you get stuff like movie trailers on there. It's pulling down movie trailers. Yeah. I think one thing that might be useful, this is kind of a 37 signal sort of approach, but I think when people click on podcasts for the first time, they shouldn't get a big yellow warning that says there are no podcasts here. It would be great if there was some way that it could come preloaded with some unobjectionable podcasts, or it could give you some kind of a link that would, I don't know, get populated back into iTunes in such a way that, oh, well, here's stuff that you might enjoy that we can pull down as a sample.
Well, that's the first thing people notice is that you can't actually download stuff directly onto the disk. And I imagine that's a capability that will be added. Although it adds this whole issue of rights. Right now, you don't have to worry about rights management because you've already got the rights management handled by a computer somewhere else.
And that's why I don't think they'll be adding that, Leo. Yeah. I don't think they want to get into that stream.
Right. Well, a lot of people are doing a lot of hacking. Before it was out for one day, the disk image was out, and apparently it's pretty much OS X, a pretty normal OS X. iPod Hacks has... actually came from Mac Rumors via a forum post at somethingawful.com. The instructions for adding Parian to it so that you can play back XVID and DivX movies. You do have to open it up, pull the drive, mount the file system, install Parian and Dropbear or enable SSH. And then
it doesn't really sync properly, right?
That's a good question. How would you get the files over there? I don't know.
There's some kind of a little bootstrap thing that happens with this movie that runs. I don't completely understand. I don't think it's as automatic as it is with an MP4 movie.
This description doesn't at any point say how to get other movies into it. So maybe they're
pull the drive every time. What's the big deal?
Maybe. Well, that's probably, I would imagine, why that's why they put SSH on there, so you can log in and cop and use.
I mean, you pointed out something interesting, though, which is, I mean, the first day this came out, I don't know if it was Make or one of the, maybe might have been Ultimate Apple Weblog, you basically tear the bottom off this thing, take out four screws, and you got access to your drive, and you can go in there, and it's amazing how hackable it is.
Pentium M in there is the processor. It is running, as we said, kind of an OS X. People are talking about booting it from a USB drive. I'm looking at, there's already an AppleTVHacks.net website.
That was going to be my pick, Leo.
Was it? All right. I won't talk any more about it. There's a hard drive upgrade. People got it up to 120 gigabytes. Although, again, because it streams so well, I don't know if the size of the hard drive is all that important. Desktop working on it. Somebody's got Apache working on it. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Why is it that people want to work so hard to avoid listening to podcasts and watching TV shows on this thing? They haven't had enough time to get that bored with it.
They want to do more. Well, you know what the real interest is, of course, is getting BitTorrent running on it somehow and interfacing with it. That's what you want.
Yeah,
right?
I want police officers clad in black with all kinds of weapons swinging into my windows every hour of the day or night. That's what happens the first moment that someone gets BitTorrent working on Apple TV, because the MPAA and the TV industry will not allow this to happen. That's when Skynet becomes self-aware, when you can hook up BitTorrent directly to your TV set.
That's the actual singularity. Then we've got a problem.
And it just burns an image of Jack Valenti on your set.
But that's what you want. You want BitTorrent. You want to be able to download any movie you want, play it back through the Apple TV, and then you've got a device, right?
I think they're writing something into the new Patriot Act that makes that illegal.
That and Baba Ganoush.
Well, I mean, and you're really close with Democracy Player of being able to do that, you know, get almost to that, if Democracy Player was able to.
Well,
and
that's what Zudio is trying to do, right, with the new Azurius, isn't it? It's about BitTorrent, although I notice there's no... proprietary content on there.
But yeah, they're all moving that direction. Of course, what everyone wants to do is get on there. And I think that there's Apple or somebody's really going to have to solve some kind of peer-to-peer process, just because that's what really opens this thing up. It does become an expense issue if you start putting up 720p. I mean, Libsyn can take us to a certain level, but for everyone to be doing it, I think that that's going to be a heavy bandwidth cost if you're very popular.
There's also the problem, I mean, if you're like me and you're syncing, a consideration, again, if we take it as read that an HD movie, for example, would be 4 gigs, for me, that's 4 gigs on my, that's over 10% of the available space on my Apple TV, but it's also 4 gigs that's got to be sitting on my drive. And that starts to add up.
Well, you have a 120 gig drive, that's 30 movies.
Well, how much excess space? We've had this conversation.
Oh, we don't
how
know.
Much excess
that's a good
space
question.
Do you have? I mean, for me, I'm always having to throw stuff out of my iTunes library. iTunes and iPhoto are the sort of constant source of bloat for me.
I have a whole separate drive hooked to an old laptop.
Something, by the way, you cannot do with the Apple TV. There's no... there's USB, but you can't put an external drive on it.
Service USB, yeah.
You know, that's still kind of an item of annoyance with me, with Apple TV, with iTunes, with the iPod. The fact that you have to install everything through a managed library, that especially when you have far, far more music and video than you have capacity for on your local device, I just got so fed up with having to, every time I rip a new DVD that I bought and I want to travel with it on my iPod, I just don't want to have that 1.2 gigabyte file on my hard drive while I'm syncing it over. And now I've just thrown my hands up in the air and decided, well, you know what? I've got this Sony PSP. This is my new dedicated video player because I can just drag a file onto a memory card and I'm done.
Should we talk about the stuff that sucks?
All right. What's wrong with Apple TV?
Some of it feels a little bit 1.0 for sure. I mean, I like the fact that I can get my music pushed out to there. I've got a whole bunch of Airport Expresses that I usually stream to for day to day stuff. But I kind of like the fact that you can push music. The screensaver while music is playing is very ADD. It keeps jumping around and changing and flipping and going into these different modes.
That's to protect your plasma screen, though. I mean, that's
if you can afford a plasma screen in Apple TV, you deserve to have burn-in. Buy another one next year. Give the old one to your snotty 16-year-old trust fund kid.
Scott Bourne, why are you not buying an Apple TV?
Well, I mean, I kind of like what Andy was saying earlier. I mean, first of all, I've got like state-of-the-art cable HD DVRs. I've got DVDs that are, you know, pumping stuff out. I got Blu-ray. I got all this stuff. I just don't see any reason to take a step back and get a lower quality product. And also because I'm more interested in this as a concept right now than I am a product. I think it'll be a big deal someday. So for me, I would have to undo my system to put this thing in, and I just don't see myself taking advantage of it. I might get one to throw on a plasma screen that I, you know, get a little Panasonic 42-inch plasma screen for my bedroom or something, but
that's your little like extra TV is a 42-inch plasma.
Yeah. Well, he spends a lot of time in the bedroom.
You know what I mean.
Anyway. It's like your second TV poops out my TV. Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, look, I made another Costco TV.
I got to say that one of the reasons that I probably won't consider buying the 1.0 is I'm pretty attuned to sound. And I have a very nice, you know, sound system, surround sound. I have Dolby 7.1. I've got all the speakers. I've spent quite a lot of money on it. And not being able to get surround sound out of this is kind of a deal breaker for me.
Go ahead, Andy.
I'm sorry. I just want to ask you, what kind of a setup do you have inside your house? Is the room tuned for surround sound? Because I find I have an old, actually an ancient Dolby 5.1 setup, and I find myself really not even activating the rear speakers because I just don't have a room where it's such a really wonderful, immersive experience. Now, do you really tell the difference between 7.1 and every other configuration?
In my particular room, Andy, the answer is yes. Plus, I spent the money to have a pro come out.
$100,000 audio setup.
I had a pro come out and specifically tune where the speakers
from
go.
Germany.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ooh. So, I heard a German pro.
Couldn't afford a Canadian. Well, that's all right.
Oh, the Germans are the best when it comes to tuning sounds. They know how to take sound and make it sing.
Actually, that's when I got my high-end clip system, Leo. But since then, I've purchased the ultimate high-end Monitor Audio Platinum Series speakers, which I had a British engineer install.
Well, you know, those Germans, they don't know that.
But I will say, Andy, you're right. There are rooms where surround sound doesn't work. I'm lucky that I have a room that's perfect for that, and I can hear the difference. But even if I couldn't hear the difference between 5.1 and 7.1, guess what? Apple TV doesn't even give you 5.1.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
I used to make fun of those people who would be like, oh, you're not going to believe the difference. Once you start watching HD, you can't watch normal TV again.
No,
I was like, God, you're such a loser. Like, why don't you just get over it? Like, you're like what? Like, you know, you're like your Howie Mandel game show needs to be in HD. And then the funny part is, like, literally, like, 2 hours into HD, it was like, ah, and you get this image. Just
sweet mystery of life, I have found you.
It's hard to, when you see it, you do kind of notice the difference.
Well, and one thing I want to say is that, one thing I was going to say that I think is exciting is, once again, this is a huge advantage for podcasters right now, because they are able to literally produce content that, I mean, you got to, if it's good content, the visual quality could be higher than what people are getting on HD cable, because that is being heavily compressed.
Right.
And if you compress it just a little bit less, and because we're not trying to do 40-minute shows, we might be doing 3 to 7-minute video shows. If we're doing those short shows, we can afford to make them a little bit bigger. We can afford to make them a little bit cleaner, and they'll actually be better than the cable experience someone gets with HD, and we can do that right now with Apple TV.
Do you think that Apple's sort of sending a message by not putting in like a 100-gig hard drive, or even making that as an option? The fact that it's giving it a 40-gig hard drive, which is enough for an ambitious amount of music, an ambitious number of podcasts, an ambitious number of low-resolution video, but it's just not an HD studly hard drive. You need at least 100 gigs to do anything cool.
And you're streaming. I think that's really right. The message is that people won't... I'm not even sure why they built the sync in. It streams so well, except that I guess if you have a computer that just doesn't connect well.
Realize that, you know, a computer costs money to run. I mean, I really don't want to keep a 140, 100, 200 watt machine on 24 hours for that sort of thing.
By the way, I just want to point out, because somebody will point out in the comments if I don't, that the Xbox 360 has done almost all of this since it came out. And I'm willing to bet the only one of you that actually has an Xbox 360 hooked up to the same monitor in the same setting. I've been buying shows on the Xbox Live Marketplace, playing them back. I think they look marginally better. Not a lot better, but marginally better. You can get real high def 720p movies and some high def TV shows on Xbox Live, which you can't get. You can only get SD quality on the iTunes store. I have to say that Xbox 360 is just not as elegant, as slick, or as easy to use. It has some technical advantages, like many Microsoft products, but the ease of use isn't there. And by the way, the Apple TV is silent. The Xbox 360 whines like a little power mower in my bedroom.
Sounds like a jet engine.
Yeah, it's really noisy.
Plus, how much does it cost to outfit an Xbox 360 with the same sort of features as an Apple TV?
$399.
That includes a hard drive?
Yeah, it comes with a hard drive.
And how much does DVDs?
It's a 20-gig hard drive.
And it connects directly to the internet, right?
The other thing is you can buy stuff on the Xbox 360, absolutely.
Right. Does it cost money to be part of the Xbox Marketplace?
Yeah, but not... you have to buy a certain amount of credit. But it's not... No, it's not a monthly subscription. You just have to buy a certain amount of credit.
Okay.
Actually, there is a subscription, but it's a fairly low subscription, a yearly subscription. I don't remember, to tell the truth.
I have a feeling I have a feeling there's a couple reasons that Apple is taking this approach. I mean, one is, first of all, you don't want somebody to hook this thing up and then realize they've got to wait 3 hours to see something. And just in terms of the user experience, I could see them very much saying, well, you know what, let's start out with stuff that's not going to be too crazy. Even if you download an episode of Lost, it's not going to put you out of business in terms of downloading. But second, with only 40 gigs on there, and again, for most people who are syncing like me, that's also going to be 40 gigs on your drive. If you're not streaming, so if you have somebody go out and download eight HD movies, what else are you going to buy? You know what I'm saying? Can they charge that much more to be worthwhile to fill up your drive that fast? Yeah. No, they can't.
They can't. There's the answer, ladies and gentlemen. just to clarify, the Xbox Live 3-month membership premium gold pack that includes some minutes to buy stuff is $30. And for a year, it's $60. So, you know, unlike iTunes, you do have to pay a subscription fee.
Yeah, that bugs me a little.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't like the idea of paying money for the privilege of being able to pay more money.
Pay more money, yeah. Well, you're getting other stuff, online gaming and things. True. I mean, that was the origin of the product.
It's value added.
Yeah.
Well, I have the Xbox 360, and I have the PlayStation 3.
Oh, good, okay.
And I have...
PlayStation 3, by the way, I have to say... I have finally played with one. It looks good.
It looks really good on a 50-inch plasma.
Resistance Fall of Man is stunning.
I just played that game today.
Yeah. I was poo-pooing the PlayStation 3, and Paul Thurrott talked me into looking at it, and I have to say, if it weren't $700, I'd have one of my as well.
I think that one thing between all of these that's exciting both for producers and for consumers of content is that all three of these platforms are going to be competing heavily with each other,
right?
You know, to fill that up, you know. So as a producer, it's really exciting because they all want content, and as a consumer, it's going to be great because you're just going to see a big push, you know, in this area. This is going to be, I think, a really, really heavy growth area, and I think that whether even though Sony and Microsoft have been doing it, I think Apple's entry is going to benefit both, is going to benefit them as well. It's just going to add a lot more excitement to the process.
Let's wrap it up. Any final thoughts before we go to our picks of the week? You can use your picks from last week, by the way. Reuse last week's picks.
Well, I think it's an exciting turn of events. I think it's going to start an important conversation. I think it's going to allow podcasters new opportunities. I just think that for me personally, it's not something to get crazy about just yet. But
it ain't iPhone.
It ain't no iPhone. Now, I'll tell you this. As soon as we see an iPhone hack to the Apple TV, I will then buy one.
I actually have a prediction, and you know I don't like to do the predictions. I don't know if it's a prediction so much.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, you ready? Ready?
Ready. We're ready.
There's going to be a Beatles Yellow Submarine Apple TV.
I still don't understand why that didn't happen.
No,
that really should have happened.
Oh, well, you know, this came up a little bit on Twit, but I think the interesting thing here, we were talking a little bit about with the guys from the Tiki Bar show about, you know, competition and all this kind of blah, 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 about, oh, competing with each other and blah, blah, blah. I think the really interesting thing to watch at this point is going to be the really big players for whom an investment in this kind of content is trivial, to see them coming in much more of a way than, for example, right now you see things like the Lost podcast or the Family Guy podcast. I think it's going to be really interesting to see them potentially see big producers making kind of little bits of micro content that are tailored for the Apple TV. I really think that's going to happen in the next 3 months.
Really, screw micro content. I really think that a year from now, this isn't a prediction, but I'm really more interested in seeing what happens when the big guys, not the mom and pop producers, start to get into this. If they suddenly realize, if Apple manages to get a really significant number of households with Apple TVs, this really changes the way that, again, newscasts can be broadcast, the way that bonus features on tonight's episode of The Office can be broadcast. Right now, CBS is trying to be as aggressive as possible as to indicate that, well, this episode of The Amazing Race logs in at 44 minutes, but we also have 8 more minutes worth of content that's waiting for you on CBS.com, which a lot of people aren't going to simply by virtue of the fact that a lot of people just aren't in the habit of watching TV through a computer screen. But if that's a seamless transition between putting down one remote and picking up another remote and watching the same content on a different screen, that really could change the way entertainment is delivered over the next two years.
Well, also, I think that if you add interactivity to the ones that you're buying from iTunes, if I'm able to be sitting there watching, for instance, Lost or 24 on that I bought through iTunes, and I get to the end and I could click on something, you know, in the to just immediately download the other stuff, then we're able to start branching into more and more content. You know, I think those are other things that then you're not even going back and forth. You're once again having your experience with the Apple TV completely.
That's interesting. I really do think that interactive TV is a lot like what interactive movies were like 10 years ago, where the technology is, no one has been that brilliant yet to really figure out how to make it work. You can put features in that you think people want, but then people will leave it alone. It wasn't until interactive gaming came along that we realized that, oh wait, that's what an interactive movie is. It's Vice City. It's not a movie that stops at a certain point where you ask the audience if they want the guy to turn left or go down the alley. I was just saying that I'm not sure if anybody alive today will really get the idea of interactive TV.
I don't think that it really works for narrative content. I think it's kind of in my opinion, for the most part, it's a bit of a waste of time for stuff like Lost or 24, except at the end to tell you you could go watch a bunch of extras. But I do think that for non-fictional stuff, for instance, you know, if I'm watching something that I'm watching something about camping, or, you know, I want to see more about how to use that hammer, you know, I can get more information, and I think people could grow into that pretty quickly.
Well, the interactive lower thirds that we were doing with
that we use with MacBreak, yeah, exactly.
That broke the Apple TV.
It broke Apple TV, yeah, exactly.
Once again, Alex is too far ahead of his time.
I do got to take that back. Once you mentioned Lost, I've suddenly realized the reason why I don't watch Lost is that I'm constantly wondering, well, what's the deal with that guy? Oh, why are those people?
He can't click on it. He wants to click on it.
Right, exactly. If there was a hyperlink saying, what the hell the deal is with that guy? Click, push AB start. Yeah,
that would be really, if you really think about it, you know, you could, there's all kinds of ways to hack that up, specifically with something like Lost, where you could, I want to see the last three segments that had him in it, the last 2 or 3 minute pieces, so I can catch back up to, you know, why we're here, you know.
That's cool.
You know, that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
In a pie in the sky sort of way.
You know, Jay Adelson at South by Southwest, he's, of course, the CEO of Revision 3 that does Dig Nation and Pixel Perfect and all those other shows, which I think a number of them you produce, Alex, said that this is he predicted Apple TV would absolutely change everything. It's the beginning of true IPTV. Of course, he has some interest in it being that way since he runs a network of IPTV shows. So. We all agree. It's, I think, pretty important. And I know I'll be watching my Apple TV tonight, even though my wife and son will yell at me when Steve Carell freezes again. Time for our picks. And, Andy, we jumped you. You weren't even planning to be on this show. We just kind of corralled you. So I'm not going to make you have a pick unless you've got something that you've been looking at.
See, that's cool because I haven't been doing the show for a year. So essentially, I've got 8 or 9 months worth of stuff that I haven't talked about. So, about 1/3 into the show, when you first mentioned the pick of the week, I had my little panic attack. Like, holy cow. Let's go to the dock and see something that we haven't talked about yet. But actually, one of the most important applications, I'm almost apologetic to say, is a little app called Comictastic. This is a RSS and HTML scraper based internet app that does nothing but download comic strips for you. It is like if everyone who does an online available comic strip were smart enough to have an RSS feed or to podcast it, this would be the iTunes for that sort of thing. Wow. Where all you have to do, you can find it at spiny.com, just like spinynorman.com.
of course.
Exactly. So all I have to do is give it the URL of either, if it's an online strip, just give it the RSS feed. If you're at like United Features Syndicate or a newspaper, like Boston Globe's comics page, all you have to do is give it the URL for the page, and it will do, 9 times out of 10, it'll do a really good job of figuring out which image on this page is the right one. And then you simply say it, please, tell it at 6 a.m. every single morning, please download all my comic strips. And so now every morning I get 40, 50, 60 comic strips from all over the country. I remember as a kid, I would have to sneak a peek in my neighbor's Boston Herald because my parents subscribed to the Boston Globe because the Herald has Snoopy and Charlie Brown and the Globe did not. Now, essentially, every strip I'm interested in, whether it's old media or new media, is now available to me. As a matter of fact, I even get a little hostile now because Steve Canyon, like the really great classic Milk Canyon strip, just started getting rerun from strip number 1 3 weeks ago. And Comictastic got it for 2.5 weeks. And then I don't know why. I guess the person who was putting it up online didn't like that because all of a sudden Comictastic won't download it anymore. And I'm like, no! It's an adventure strip. There's an ongoing storyline.
Steve Canyon?
You still get your Mary Worth.
Mary Worth. Gotta have Mary Worth. That's
okay, Leo, have your finger ready for the rat hole button because I'm going to have to address this.
Uh oh,
Milton can't. If you're mocking a comic strip that was produced in the early 40s. Yeah. In the early 40s was like the adventure pulp comic strips that you really need to get into. Look for it online. First week's worth, and you'll like it.
I grew up reading Steve Canyon.
There you go.
He's got the squared. He's got the squared Merlin Man jaw there.
So he's a hideous freak.
Yeah. Catcher's mitt with a wig, folks.
HD.
I love that.
Best of all, Comictastic is free, free, free. So
free. We like it. It's a zero, Alex. Yes. Alex Lindsay, you have anything expensive for us to buy these days?
No, I don't.
You showed some really cool stuff now. Come on now. Don't stop now. Actually, Andy, I want you to know that Alex showed your degritter program on
the Noise Ninja.
Noise Ninja on the lab. We gave you credit. We loved that program.
Awesome. Yeah, it was, you know, I was listening to the show and I
You weren't even on the show.
I wasn't even on the show. I was listening to our show and I heard it and I was like, I'm going to give that a shot. And it works really well.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. And if you turn all the dials way up, it turns into kind of like a painterly kind of thing, which is also kind of cool.
Like you left the cake out in the rain, yeah.
So I have a geeky one, but a cheap one. It's free. In fact, it's not something you have to download. It's actually just hidden on most of our Macs. It's one of those things that I doodle with a fair bit on the plane. And it's called Grapher. Have you guys played with Grapher at all?
Yeah.
So it's sitting inside of your utility. It's hidden. So you got all these applications.
Is this a sequel to the graphing calculator?
Yeah, I think. I don't know. But
graphing calculator was so cool. And the story, you know the story of graphing calculator. Andy Hertzfeld.
That it got snuck in?
Yeah. If you haven't read it, go to folklore.org and read the history of graphing calculator. The guy who wrote it was fired and continued to work at Apple for another year. Nobody knew. He still had his card. He would go in and write it and then showed it to somebody. And they said, this is good.
They totally snuck it into the release.
They put it in.
Unofficially, they just put it in the release.
Now, they killed Graphing Calculator, but Grapher is still around. It's in the utilities folder. I think that's one reason people don't see it.
Yeah, so it's hidden in there. And then there's all this boring stuff in there that you don't normally want to use. But there's this Grapher. I just opened it up randomly not too long ago, actually. And just to figure out, I was figuring out what I had to throw away because I was running out of space. So literally, I just started going through, okay, what do I not need? And so I opened it up, and it was really cool. And if you click on, there's a 3D graph, and if you click on it and you say open, what's crazy is that you will get a, you can, they have little examples. So there'll be like a, you know, a vector field or a, and it has the actual equations. So you see the equation there, and then you see the and you see the 3D representation of what that is.
It's the super coolest thing in the world.
Gosh. So
I
you're
used
sitting
to
there.
Teach my kids, when my kids started doing graphing, like fourth or fifth grade,
well,
I
totally.
Said, where's graphing calculator? Where's graphing calculator? And then I found this. Yeah. That's so cool.
It is such a great way to visualize, you know, what you're trying to learn in school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. When I was trying to learn calculus and trying to learn when it went from 2D to 3D transforms,
yes.
You know, the first time I had this 3D application in front of me, I actually got out my old textbook and said, well, what does the cosine want? What does it want when you take a derivative of this? Where does this curve, to use language like, where does this curve want to go? What does this function want to do? And the idea that you can just play with math like that,
it's
and
really
just
neat.
Have fun with it, as opposed to just grind out numbers after numbers. I really envy kids who have access to this sort of software now.
And everybody does. That's the, well, everybody on a Mac anyway. But I mean, what's crazy is you can really, I was sitting there talking to my kids about that because they were starting to get into algebra. And we were able to just poke up a couple of these.
Yep.
And it immediately makes sense why it's doing what it's doing, rather than it being just a bunch of numbers that they have to, you know, dial out. So
cool. I don't know why they don't make a bigger deal about it, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very nifty.
It's one of the coolest things on the Mac. Scott Bourne.
Well, my pick was going to be Apple TV.
No.
Hacks.
No, go right ahead. Tell us all about it. I never heard of that site.
Because, you know, I knew we'd be talking about the Apple TV. It's like there's 7 hacks, 4 tutorials. It's a cool site. But I'm going to go with my backup because I always have a backup.
You're smart. By the way, that's appletvhacks.net.
Yeah, great site. And my backup is something that I'm a little sheepish to admit. But a long time ago, I found this company we all know called Ambrosia Software. Every once in a while, I visit their site just to see what they're into. And I found out they had a new game called Sketch Fighter, at least new to me.
Oh, awesome.
And I started playing the Sketch Fighter 4000 Alpha. And I think like 3 hours later, I looked up at the clock and said, uh-oh.
Yes.
It is incredible. Have you guys played it?
No.
Yeah.
Sketch Fighter 4000 Alpha from Ambrosia Software. If you go to the site, you'll see a little demo. It is cool. It is. That's all I can say. It's cool. And like everything else at Ambrosia, it's, you know, either it's amazing what they put out for what they get back from you. And I just really thought, you know, if you want a cheap game, you're looking. I just need to put a disclaimer in here, though. It will steal time from you.
Yeah.
If you start playing it.
It really is one of those like classic Thumbbuster arcade games. With a great twist that it looks like you're playing on like a seventh grader's algebra's notebook, you know, all those like doodles of starships. Oh God! Anyway, and this is the reason why I don't have an Xbox 360 or a game console, because I have a job and it would not get done.
This is really cool. I can't stop playing it.
It looks a little like kind of like Asteroids combined with like
Galaga or
Zaxxon or something.
Well, the neat thing about it is you don't need to read any directions. You just jump in, which means
shooting.
Yeah. Just start killing things, yes.
Which means it's perfect for this gang of five.
Yeah, no kidding. Directions? Wait a minute. Directions. I'm going to do mine because I always leave Merlin for last because, you know, anything else, everything else is an anticlimax. What's Merlin's done his, so we always save him for last. Mine is a program that actually was an answer to a question on the radio show. there's a really good program on the Windows site called RoboForm that automatically watches you surf and fills in passwords for you. It makes it easy to have a different password for every website suddenly, you know, securely. And people have said, well, you know, as always, I got a number of people say, well, what about the Mac? There is no RoboForm for the Mac, but there is onepasswd.com. One, number one, P-A-S-S-W-D.com. It's a password manager, but also has autofill for OS X, works with Safari, OmniWeb, Firefox, Camino, even works with Flock. That's how good it is. You have multiple identities. It is anti-phishing. It also will prevent keylogging because you're not typing. And it uses the keychain, which means it's absolutely secure. It's a really great idea. It's not free. I wish it were $30, but you can try before you buy. Password manager, one, PASSWD.com.
That's cool.
It's a useful thing. I mean, it's not sexy. It's not Sketch Fighter, but it's useful, and a lot of people want something like this. So there you go. And how about you, Mr. Mann?
Well, mine is not sexy per se. It's nerdy, but I'd like to take every opportunity I can to remind people of the awesomeness that's hiding under the OS X services menu. This is like discovering an amazing closet of functionality that you never knew existed. Every time you install an application, and built into the system are all these great little things that I don't even know how you describe services. You can just do stuff in different places using services. You can do stuff. We talked about Humane Text, you know, a great way to transform into Markdown.
Yeah, I've been
all kinds
using
of great
that.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's kind of hidden away. It's kind of hidden under the application menu. You'll see the services drop down. And then once you go into the services menu, there's this buttload of different choices under there that can be kind of bewildering. Well, there's a wonderful little thing out there called Service Scrubber that's put out by Minitrix. That's at minitrix.com, M-A-N-Y-Trix.com. And it does two things. It looks to me like this is Peter Maurer. Is that the guy's name? The guy who did Butler?
Oh, Peter Maurer is great.
Yeah, and the guy who did, you know what else he did, Leo?
Yes, I do.
He did TextExpander, what became TextExpander.
Sold it. Yep.
Which we love.
Yep.
That's right. Service Scrubber, when you pull it up, it's an application. You pull it up and you see a list of all of the applications that have installed services on your Mac. And you have the ability to go in and shut off any or all of the services submenus, so they won't appear, which is great. So if there's stuff that you just never use, you want to get rid of, it makes it really easy to kind of clean up that whole area. But better still, you can go in and change the key mappings for any of the services that are in there. So if you've got one problem you run into is that sometimes one service menu that you want to use will step on another because people are kind of developing this stuff independently, you can go in there and say, you know what, I never use this service, shut it off. Or I do use the service, but remove the key binding for it. And, you know, this is kind of a hack inside of a hack because you really should be at least checking out the services that are in there because there's great stuff. And this will make it a lot easier to make it part of your workflow every day, Service Scrubber.
Excellent. You guys still do wines? I'm so tired of wines. I want to whine about the wines. Do you want me to do wines or should we eliminate the wines?
Fanboy.
I think that was your wine, Leo.
I don't want a wine. You guys have any wines?
We can skip it this week.
Yeah, I think we can skip it this week.
You got any wine?
I kind of want to just have a weekly whine about iCal. If I could just have about 5 minutes every week where I just talk about how assy iCal is, let's just, you know, maybe firewall a little time at the end.
How what it is?
Don't say it again.
Functionally
sassy.
Troubling it is?
How sassy it is.
Sashay. That's what I thought he was saying, Leo. I just wanted
Sashay.
To correct that.
Sashay.
Sashay. By the way, while you were talking, app. I downloaded, installed, and paid for Sketch Fighter.
So just see how it goes. Hey, you know what? That's okay because I think it was you, Leo. Somebody did that to me because I bought ImageWell as a result.
Yeah, ImageWell's great. Yeah, I use that all the time.
I use that thing every day.
Playing Sketch. I'm sorry. I should probably stop.
Your family misses you, Leo.
Everybody thinks that we're giving
Where's
these
Daddy?
Tips out. Yeah, everybody thinks we're giving these tips out to our listeners, but we're actually doing it just so we can each other find out what we need.
I'll tell you, that's the secret of all of the podcasts I do. They're not about the listeners. It's about us getting together and chatting because we love hearing, you know, this cool stuff. We just want to know what's good, what's out there, what's new. We'd be doing it even if we weren't recording it. That's the truth of it.
But Mr. Sponsor, please ignore that last statement.
Mr. Who? Ain't no sponsor here.
Is Gear Media
sponsored by Human Goodwill?
Huh?
An official sponsor would be Pizzizz.
Pizzizz. Don't forget that.
Mention the code
coupon
TWIT.
You know, I got an email. It's so funny. I got an email from a publicist yesterday saying, have you ever heard of Pizzizz? It's a fabulous program. It uses neuro-linguistic programming. And I
thought, don't you love being contacted by PR people who are really engaged with your work?
I've got
a really super.exe I think you need to push on your site.
And it's like, I finally said, I didn't know what to say. So I just said, yeah, I've heard of it. I have a coupon code if you want. You want to buy it, use the coupon code TWIT. Save you half off. Jeez. Anyway. So there were no wines. Nobody's unhappy. Except
I'm on a Passover Coke.
My laptop still doesn't go to sleep when I shut it. That's just an old wine. I've gotten used to it.
Old wine in new bottles.
shutting the laptop and it's fine.
But hasn't been happening for so long you've actually justified in your mind as a good thing.
I really should be thinking about the fact that I'm shutting my thing and actually putting it to sleep. So
because the great thing is that now iTunes, the shares are always available to my network. It's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Steve Jobs.
It's the fact that it's as hot as an ironing iron when it comes out of my bag when I forget to do it.
That's happened to me. It's bad.
That freaks me out when that happens. Bad. And your battery's low, like you're getting ready to get on a plane.
And the little band's going.
Yeah, like it's an hour into the flight. You can take out your book. You take it out. The battery's completely gone, and it's like 120 degrees.
Yipes.
I'm a little bit upset because my very last PowerPC based PowerBook now has that infirmity where I had to go to Office Max and buy a couple of those really big rubber bands just to make sure the lid stays shut in the bag so that when I open it up
very
at the airport...
Very Green Acres.
Okay, exactly. It's like, if it were a car, there'd be like one body panel that's colored like primer. I'm embarrassed to have this. But I'm also sick and tired of opening up my backpack.
I've actually seen that laptop. You brought that on the cruise. I remember now.
Lilith is well-loved.
Lilith, yes.
Well, the worst part is I have this newer, Intel laptop. And I lay it on its top on the lid. Every time I put it down, I always put it down upside down. And I don't really think much about it. And someone was asking, why do you put they were trying to figure out, does it cool it faster or anything else? And it was just because my laptop, the top would always open. So I just got into this habit of I lay my laptop down.
Well, that's the right way to do it. Many people don't know that. That's the correct way to lie down a laptop.
you know what we should do, because like they're if we go to a trade show, there are people who know who we are. Let's just do something really, really bizarre, like put exactly three postage stamps at the exact same position on all of our notebooks. They'll think it's some sort of incredible insider tip, and everybody
they
will start
doing it. Everybody's doing it. I think it'd be fun. It's a meme. We could fake a fake meme, a pseudo meme we could create.
See, that's right over the 74LS dual Scotty chip, and basically with that extra bit of heft, I'm getting a speed boost of 0.8%. It works. I'm getting
great performance now that I've replaced my Johnson rod. Yeah, we should get a fake term. Again, it's like the canary trap, right? We should come up with some kind of a fake term.
Yeah, the Fornord.
Sinusoidal dingle armor prelaminated frangelite.
What he said. Guys, I'm going to wrap this up. I know we could just keep on talking forever, but I see no point since we've done a fabulous hour, and we want to thank everybody for joining us, and wish you all join us next week. We'll be back here with Andy Anatko from CWOB.com, the colossal waste of bandwidth. How do you say that in Chicago? Colossal waste of bandwidth.
We basically say the internet.
The internet. He's right for the Chicago
I is the internet.
The internet. Alex Lindsay, pixelcore.tv for all of his great video podcasts suitable for framing on your Apple TV. And, of course, pixelcore.com if you want to join his guild of media creation professionals. Scott Bourne is podango.com and also podcastingtricks.com and aperturetricks.com and wishes he had thought of appletvhacks.com. But he does have Apple Phone. Is it applephonetricks.com?
Apple Phone Show.
Show.
And just so you know, Aperture Tricks is no longer. It's been made part of the conglomerate of the O'Reilly sites.
Oh, did you sell it to them?
I'm not going to discuss that.
Oh, wow.
It is now officially part of the O'Reilly Inside Aperture blog. It was a piddly amount of money, okay? Just a little.
I'd like to be piddled on 42-inch
plasma.
Piddle me, baby.
I got a PowerPC PowerBook. I got an old-style TV set.
Piddle on me.
Everyone hates me because I write for a newspaper instead of a website. I've had enough.
You should get Scott to buy you some new rubber bands.
And, of course, Merlin Mann at themerlinshow.com. And you just put a new interview up with...
Peter Hughes, the bass player from the Mountain Goats, who talks about how he uses LiveJournal to do his band's tour diary. Very cool.
Cool. 43folders.com nice also. And we will all be working this week at Gear Media Tech. So if you're coming to our podcasting conference in San Francisco, say hi. Andy won't be there because he's in Boston. But
I'm old media. Again, I'm not liked. I'm not just in disliked.
Not allowed. Sorry. You're old media.
I keep getting ink on people's shoes.
He still has a hat that says press on it. It's unbelievable. He uses those flash bulbs that pop out. I don't.
Andy's always putting three stamps on stuff because he wants to be cool like the new media people.
I just want to show off how much scratch I got, baby. I can afford 3 times 39 cents, man.
10 times 3, baby. GMT is also a podcast. You can see it at pixelcore.tv. And we'll be doing MacBreak Live at GMT. I guess you and I, Merlin, will be doing Apple TV. And we'll be doing Twit Live Friday afternoon. So far, Veronica Belmont has agreed to appear. And I imagine we can count on Merlin.
I'm there.
And I believe Dvorak will be there. And so it should be a lot of fun. And you'll see it. Will we do a video version of this, Alex?
I wasn't sure. I was planning not to, but we can. No, we can do that.
We can use one of those cheap HDMI cameras that you.
I think for that we would need to use a high quality camera like the XL2,
the $14,000 investment. Anybody want to buy an XL2 used very lightly, like 4 times? Please let me know. No, we're going to keep them because they'll be great. Someday the Smithsonian will want them.
Collector's items.
Yeah. And that's about it. Mac Break Weekly is broke, or whatever we say. I still haven't figured that out.
Break time is over.
Break time is over!
Something like that.
Put the biscuits in the oven, Melandy. We're coming home.